welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the 2019 season. Now, the program notes I'm reading today are for the performances by the North Carolina Symphony at 7:30 p.m. Thursday, April 11th at the Wilson Center, Cape Fear Community College in Wilmington, at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, April 12th and 13th at Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh, at 7:30 p.m. Sunday, April 14th at Memorial Hall in Chapel Hill, and at 8 p.m. Tuesday, April 23rd at Lee Auditorium, Pinecrest High School in Southern Pines. All concerts except for the Southern Pines performance will be conducted by Grant Llewellyn. The Southern Pines concert will be conducted by Wesley Schultz. The featured soloist will be violinist and North Carolina Symphony concertmaster Brian Reagan. The program on this performance will include the following. The North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Osiandes by Jean Sibelius, and that will be followed by the Poem for Violin and Orchestra, Opus 25 by Ernest Chausson, and then Lily Boulanger's D'un matin de printemps. Then, following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform 4C interludes from Peter Grimes, Opus 33A, composed by Benjamin Britten. And that will be followed by the featured work on this performance, La Mer, by Claude Debussy. Now I'll begin our reading of symphony notes with information about our featured soloist, violinist Brian Reagan, the Annabel Lundy Fetterman Chair at the North Carolina Symphony. Since 1990, Chicago native and North Carolina Symphony concertmaster Brian Reagan has appeared as a soloist with the North Carolina Symphony more than 100 times, making him the most frequent soloist in the orchestra's history. He has also been concertmaster of the Chautauqua Symphony Orchestra at the Chautauqua Institution in New York since 1996, only the fourth concertmaster for that orchestra since its inception in 1929. On September 13, 2001, Reagan was called on with 24 hours' notice to substitute for Itzhak Perlman in the North Carolina Symphony's season-opening concert. On September 11, 2011, as part of the 10-year commemoration of the attacks on America, Reagan was a featured soloist with mezzo-soprano Krista River in This Thread, a setting of Toni Morrison's poem by composer J. Mark Scarce. That concert was televised by UNC-TV and WRAL. Before joining the North Carolina Symphony, Reagan was assistant concertmaster with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra under Andre Previn and Lauren Mizell. He had previously served as concertmaster of the Cleveland Institute of Music Symphony Orchestra, and he served on the faculty of Carnegie Mellon University. In 2004, Reagan performed as soloist and concertmaster of the inaugural Cayman Islands Music Festival, and he continues to participate in the St. Bart's Music Festival. Highlights of his chamber music career include a live televised performance of the Brahms Piano Trio No. 1 in B major with Andre Previn and Yo-Yo Ma, and Claude Bowling's Suite for Violin and Jazz Piano Trio with Claude Bowling and his trio. Reagan, a graduate of the Cleveland Institute of Music, made his solo debut with the Cleveland Orchestra at the age of 20. He has held faculty and visiting artist positions with Carnegie Mellon University, Chatham College, the Cleveland Institute of Music, and East Carolina University. He currently teaches privately in his home. Many of his students have continued their studies at major conservatories, and several are performing with orchestras, including the Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Indianapolis, and North Carolina symphonies. Regan performs on a Lorenzo and Tommaso Carcassi violin made in Florence, Italy, in 1763. The North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Osiandes, Opus 73, by Jean Sibelius. Sibelius was born December 8, 1865, in Hämeenlinna, Finland, and he died September 20, 1957, Ainola, Finland. And this work was composed in 1913 and 14. The first performance, June 14, 1914, at the Norfolk Music Festival in Norfolk, Connecticut, and it was conducted by the composer. Now, here is the overview. Most of Jean Sibelius' tone poems were inspired by legends from the Finnish national epic, the Kalevala, or from nature. The inspiration for Osiandes, however, came from the ancient Greek poet Hesiod. Personifying springs, the Osiandes were the 3,000 daughters of the Titan Oceanus and the sea nymph Tethys. The work was preceded by two earlier versions. The first, a three-movement suite, is partially lost. The second, a shortened version, was only recently discovered in the Yale Library. The Osiandes was written on commission for a trip to the United States, and Sibelius conducted the premiere himself. Now here's what to listen for. A delicate flute ensemble opens this work, about a nervous ostentato in the strings, suggesting a siren song. As the pace picks up, the music takes on a dance-like quality. There's an increasing tension from the darker harmonies and orchestration that characterize the composer's style. It is as if a stormy ocean drowns out the gamboling of the nymphs. An oboe duet signals a quick end to the storm, but the nymphs are definitely more subdued. The instrumentation for this work is for piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, English horn, two clarinets, bass clarinet, two bassoons, contrabassoon, four horns, three trumpets, three trombones, timpani, percussion, two harps, and strings. Next, the North Carolina Symphony performs Poem for Violin and Orchestra, Opus 25, by Ernest Chausson. Chausson was born January 20, 1855, in Paris, died June 10, 1899, in Limay, France. This work was composed in 1896. The first performance was December 27, 1896, at the Nancy Conservatory, Guy Ropart's conducting, with Eugene Yasse as the soloist. Now here is the overview. French composer Ernest Chausson was one of the few composers who came from a well-to-do family and was never compelled to work for a living, perhaps because he has never had to test his abilities as a professional musician. He suffered lifelong feelings of insecurity and doubt. He was a student of Jules Massenet and César Franck, and a friend of Debussy, all of whom influenced his style to some extent. But the strongest influence on his music was his own mysticism and his empathy with the sufferings of humanity. His compositions aim at emotional intensity and poetic expression rather than technical and formal display. Poem, composed in 1896 for the Belgian violinist Eugene Yasse, was apparently inspired by a short story by the Russian writer Turgenev, in French translation, Le Chant de l'Amour Triomphant, the Song of Love Triumphant, which was also Poem's original title. But Chausson's temperament was more suitable for the intimate than the epic, and he quickly pared the title down. Now here's what to listen for in this work. Poem's melancholy tone dovetails with Chausson's outlook on life. The composer's amateur status permitted him to exercise considerable freedom in handling form and structure. Poem is through composed with no exact repeats. Although Chausson presents three distinct melodies, most of the work is a free-flowing dialogue between violin and orchestra. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: solo violin, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, harp, and strings. Next, the North Carolina Symphony performs Du Matin des Printemps by Lily Bollinger. Bollinger was born August 21, 1893, in Paris, France, and died March 15, 1918, in Mézy-sur-Seine, France. The work was composed in 1917 and 1918, and the first performance is unknown. Here's the overview. The younger sister of famed teacher, conductor, and composer Nadia Bollinger, Lily Bollinger, was one of the most innovative composers of the early 20th century. At age 19, she was the first woman to win the coveted Prix de Rome. Unfortunately, a chronic illness cut her life short at the age of 25. Her songs and choral works, especially her three psalm settings and Pie Jesu, were widely admired and performed. Bollinger composed Un Matin de Printemps, of a spring morning, in a 1917-1918 time frame, first for violin and piano, and then for orchestra. It was the last composition she completed, composed when she was near death. Its cheerful and lively mood contrasts with her grim personal situation. The instrumentation for this work is as follows. It's for piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, English horn, two clarinets, bass clarinet, two bassoons, contrabassoon, four horns, three trumpets, three trombones, tuba, percussion, harp, celesta, and strings. Next, the North Carolina Symphony comes on the stage to perform 4C interludes from Peter Grimes, Opus 33A, by Benjamin Britten. Benjamin Britten was born November 22, 1913, in Lowestoft, England, and he died December 4, 1976, in Aldeburgh, England. The work was composed in 1943 and 45. The first performance, June 7, 1945, Sadler's Wells Theater, Reginald Goodall was the conductor. Now here is the overview. Growing up during and immediately after the carnage of World War I, Britten was a committed and lifelong pacifist. As World War II loomed, he followed poet W.H. Auden and other pacifists of his group to Canada and the United States, where he remained until 1942. He returned home in the midst of war to do his share for his country's morale, composing scores for concerts, radio dramatizations, and films. In the dreary post-war atmosphere of 1945, the premiere of his opera Peter Grimes was a resounding success, despite its unrelentingly grim story. Based on a barbarous character from The Burrow by poet George Crabbe, who lived from 1754 to 1832, Grimes is reclusive and driven to achieve success in fishing, a dangerous trade, shunning the close-knit and interdependent community in which he lives. In the opera, he is first seen on trial for the death of his apprentice, who he claims died of dehydration as they drifted for days without food or water after a storm. Although he is acquitted, the villagers continue to suspect him of abuse, and the court refuses to allow him to take on another apprentice. The schoolteacher, Ellen Orford, however, tries to soften both Grimes' harsh nature and the townspeople's resentment by taking responsibility for the care and safety of a new apprentice. Despite her efforts, Grimes beats the new boy, a marvelous silent partner for a boy actor. As his hut is surrounded by a mob of indignant villagers, Grimes forces the boy to escape with him to his boat. But the boy stumbles and falls down the cliff to his death. Grimes himself escapes out to sea, sinks his boat, and drowns. Now here's what to listen for. Britten composed 6 interludes to facilitate scenery changes between scenes and acts. The interludes act as orchestral mirrors of the stage drama, crystallizing in pure sound the unfolding disaster. He assembled the 4C interludes shortly after finishing the opera. Their order, however, does not follow that of the opera, but its own musical logic. Dawn, coming between the prologue and Act One, this is a much bleaker view of the ocean at dawn than Debussy ever imagined in La Mer. The initial calm overlies an ominous swelling of the waves. Sunday Morning, the opening of Act Two. This interlude depicts a Sunday morning in Grimes' village. A brass choir imitates the church bells, and later, a high woodwind choir portrays the faster bells. Included in this interlude is an orchestral version of Ellen's aria that opens the act. Moonlight, the pulsing, brooding theme that opens Act Three, foreshadows the defeat of Grimes' plan and dreams. The Storm. This interlude occurs between the 2 scenes of Act One. It begins with the furious physical storm morphing into Grimes' psychological turmoil, where violence lashes out against loneliness and hopelessness. His brooding is drowned by the increasing fury of the storm. The instrumentation for this work is as follows. For 2 piccolos, 2 flutes, 2 oboes, 2 clarinets, E-flat clarinet, 2 bassoons, contrabassoon, 4 horns, 3 trumpets, 3 trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, 2 harps, and strings. And the final work on this performance of the North Carolina Symphony is La Mer by Claude Debussy. Debussy was born August 22, 1862, in Saint-Germain-en-Laye, France. He died March 25, 1918, in Paris. The work was composed between 1903 and 1905, the first performance October 15, 1905, in Paris, with the Orchestra Lamoureux, Camille Chavillard, conducting. Now here is the overview. Perhaps you do not know that I was destined for the fine life of a sailor, and that it was only by chance that I was led away from it. But I still have a great passion for it, Claude Debussy wrote to a friend at the time he began work on La Mer in 1903. Shortly before the premiere in 1905, he commented to his publisher, "The sea has been very good to me. She has shown me all her moods." Ironically, Debussy composed most of La Mer, far from the sea, in the hills of Burgundy, believing that countless recollections were worth more than a reality whose charm generally weighs too heavily. The sea itself was not his only inspiration. Together with many late 19th century painters, Debussy greatly admired Japanese art, especially the prints and drawings of Katoshika Hokusai, who lived from 1760 to 1849. One print in particular, The Hollow Wave off Kananagawa, portrays 3 boats and their terrified crews almost swallowed by a giant wave, the curve of the wave breaking into spray and foam. Debussy chose the detail of the wave as a cover for the score of La Mer. The 3 movements of La Mer are titled Symphonic Sketches. There are numerous memorable melodic motifs which appear in more than one movement. Like the sea itself, there is an unpredictable quality in how Debussy uses them. Now here is what to listen for. The first sketch, From Dawn to Noon on the Sea, opens with a gentle murmur on the strings and harp, portraying the usual early morning calm eventually joined by the woodwinds. As the sea gradually awakens, flexing its immense power, the brass introduce a melodic motto that will reoccur at the end. Imitating the interplay of sunlight and waves, fragments of melody reappear with constant shifts of rhythm and orchestral color, reflecting the irregularity of the water's surface. Near the end, a chorale evokes the splendor of the midday sun. The second sketch, Play of the Waves, tosses musical fragments around until, hesitantly, the wind and the motion of the waves picks up. The water becomes choppy before subsiding again into calm playfulness, then gradually fading away. The many solos in this movement illustrate the infinite variety of the waves. Its principal musical theme is a trill motif and the woodwinds. The dialogue of wind and sea is by far the most turbulent of the three sketches. The approaching storm growls ominously, growing in strength, then subsiding, as if the music lingers in the eye of the storm. Slowly the violence picks up again, but Debussy's storm, while powerful, is never a force 5 gale. The main theme in this section is a surging motif in the oboes, but the movement repeats and transforms melodies from the first movements as well. Lamaire initiated a change in Debussy's style from the shimmering, melodically and structurally amorphous symbolist style epitomized in his opera Peleus and Melisande to the more conventional one that seemed to its critics less immediately evocative of nature. There erupted around the composer a rash of polemical articles and even a book published in 1910, Le Cas Debussy, meaning the Debussy case. Today the arguments are of only minor interest, but the fact that critics and the public could get so exercised over a matter of musical style continued a centuries-long tradition in French aesthetics. La Mer was composed for piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, English horn, two clarinets, three bassoons, contrabassoon, four horns, three trumpets, two cornets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, harp, and strings. These symphony notes were written and copyrighted in 2019 by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn. You have been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'll be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2019 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thank you for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.